Hey, everyone. Welcome to the Real as Yates podcast. We are your hosts, Paige Yates
and Taylor Yates.
And in this podcast, we share with you everything we know about real estate, Greater Boston, and life. And in case you're wondering, yes, we are in fact related. We are a top producing mother-son real estate agent team where we lead, surprise, the Yates team.
How you doing, Mom?
Good, thanks. How are you?
Good, thanks. Up to anything fun lately?
Well, as you all might know, and as you know, March is all about March Madness.
Mm-hmm.
And it's probably the biggest month of the year for basketball.
Yeah.
But I want you to know that I had the experience of taking your son, Asher,
mm-hmm.
to his basketball Saturday morning game. And I have to say to you that I do think—
That's the real March Madness.
That is the real March Madness. And I definitely think there's some potential March Madness players
mm-hmm.
that were on his 8-year-old team.
Yeah.
But we'll never know for another 10 or 15 years.
Yeah.
10 years at least.
I know. Well, yeah. Yeah, exactly.
But it was very fun watching 8-year-olds play basketball.
I know. They have to like swing their whole body to get the ball high enough and to get yeah. in the basket.
And I kept saying, what was so funny is it's a half court.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so on the basket end, they kind of dribble a half moon. And then mm-hmm. if they can't find anybody to shoot to, they go back all the way around yeah. the other half moon.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like always making these like half moon motions around the basket. And I keep saying, you could throw now. Throw
yeah,
it. Shoot.
I know. Right. You're like, shoot.
It was yeah. very cute. So
yeah, absolutely.
Anyway, March Madness is everywhere, as you may know, on a college level. But I will tell you that there was a lot of March Madness going on in 8-year-old Belmont basketball teams.
Yeah. Well, speaking of a kind of madness, this month we're talking about fixer-uppers. And I think you're going to have a lot to say about this because the home you currently live in was a was a real fixer-upper. And we're going to talk about this from a few different directions. And maybe we'll start with this week by what to expect when you buy a fixer-upper. So, Mom, what do you think a first-time buyer should know before purchasing a fixer-upper?
So, the first thing they need to know is no matter what they think it's going to cost to fix up the house, it's going to be much more than that.
Yeah.
So, if you say, oh, it's going to cost you $50,000 to do this, it'll be a much higher number,
it'll
like 75 or 100,000. Yeah. So just know going in, when you buy a fixer-upper, there's a lot to uncover
mm-hmm,
that doesn't mm-hmm. necessarily come out in the very beginning.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, some of it is, you know, that comes from a couple of things I have found. I've done a lot of work on my house. Number one is when a contractor gives you a quote, he or she can only give you a quote based on what they can see. And a lot of the things that drive the costs are things that you cannot see, things in the walls that maybe your plumbing isn't rigged properly, or maybe you open it up and you find that, oh, you've got some old knob and tube in there and that's got to get upgraded or replaced.
Which is wiring, old knob and tube wiring.
Correct, old wiring that is no longer allowed.
Yeah.
Second place, word to the wise, some contractors try and get business by underbidding. Right. And I'm not saying it's rampant, and usually you can suss out who's shooting you straight and who's not. But just know that the cheapest quote you get may not actually be accurate, right? That may be a pricing strategy because once that work starts, it's really hard to say
to jump
no
ship.
To finishing it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then the third place is really down to choice. When you're going through a construction project, and especially when you uncover some of these things or you have to make some important decisions, you have like a cheap option in front of you or you have an expensive option in front of you. And a lot of people are like, well, in for a penny, in for a pound. So you say, I'm going to pick the expensive option. I'm going to get kind of like the nicer thing that I think will last me longer or like look better. And those are the kinds of things that get you from like what you just described of, I thought it was going to be 50, but it ended up being 75 or 100.
Right. And I think also when you're making this decision, you have to very much understand the neighborhood or the location that mm-hmm. you're going to be taking on a fixer-upper
mm-hmm.
because you may not want to do everything that you want to do on your wish list because it no longer, the value of the property so far exceeds the other houses in the marketplace.
Right.
That you might have a tough time selling it quickly if that's what you need to do.
Right. There is such a thing as over-improving a house. And, you know, you could say to yourself, this is a consumption, not an investment. Like, I'm making my house nicer because I want to live in a nicer house. But just don't kid yourself about whether or not you're going to be able to recover that money.
Very
Can we just set the stage a little bit about when I alluded to the fact that you bought a real fixer-upper? Like, let's describe some of those things. If you don't mind, I'll start with the thing that stuck out in my mind is there was a railroad track going around the backyard.
Yeah.
And this is not like, you know, a 20-acre property. I think you live on 1 acre, right?
Three quarters of an acre.
Three quarters of an acre. And somebody put a train track around the perimeter of the backyard.
He kept metal and collected old refrigerators and all kinds of metal. And he built a little railroad to move it around the backyard.
Yeah. And there were like rusting refrigerators in the backyard. It was like, I don't know what.
It was kind of like the old TV show, Sanford and Son, you know, kind of, or the junkyard in Nantucket where everything is kind of put because they don't know where to put it. So it was a real challenge. I think, if I remember correctly, we took seven dumpsters, large 30-yard dumpsters of stuff out of the basement and the backyard.
What kind of stuff are we talking here?
Metals, sump pumps.
Wait,
refrigerators.
Like you took the sump pump out of the house, or there was just a sump pump lying around in the basement?
There were 35 sump pumps laying around the basement. It was quite...
Maybe he had like a big water management project in mind.
I think he was just a tinkerer. He had lots of little projects.
Yeah.
But I can tell you the best reaction was when I took my mother, drove by the house. I was all excited. We were going to buy it. I knew it was a fixer-upper. She started to cry. That gives you an insight into how bad the fixer-upper was. It was scary. But we made it great, and it's perfect, and we've been there a long time, so no complaints.
Buy the most beat-up house on the nicest block. I mean, people love your neighborhood.
Yeah, they do.
It shows extremely well, and I think the value is there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, very cool. I'm going to think more about what could somebody do with 35 sump pumps. It sounds like there's a bat. There sounds like there's like a Batman villain scheme.
Yeah.
I have no idea. Cool. We're going to take a quick break and then we'll come back to a question from the audience. Did you know that Paige and I aren't just your favorite real estate podcast hosts? We're also pretty darn good at our day jobs too. With over 30 years experience and $1 billion sold in Greater Boston, we're real estate agents you can trust. If you're buying or selling a home, reach out to us at contact@yatesboston.com today. Okay, Mom, let's talk about what are some financing options that are available to buyers looking to purchase and renovate a fixer-upper? That's right. You got your mortgage, but that paid for the house.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the reason you bought the fixer-upper is because you're trying to, maybe you don't have like a huge amount of money for a down payment and you're trying to stretch those dollars. What are some financing options?
Well, a lot of times people use line of credits, but you got to have enough equity in the house to do that.
Yeah. So what you might have heard someone call a HELOC, a home
HELOC.
Equity
yep.
line of credit.
That's probably the most common.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard for a first-time home buyer if they put all their money down.
Mm-hmm.
There are some people that will work with you that maybe give you a little, have you put less money down if they know that you're going to be making this kind of significant improvement to the house and creating a bigger value.
Yeah.
Sometimes people have stock options with their company and they don't want to get rid of that. So sometimes a mortgage lender, if you go and get something mortgage in-house or creatively with a Morgan Stanley or stocks or whatever you have, you might be able to get some sort of buying power from those people as well.
Got it. Well, thanks for the awesome question. If you're a curious cat and would like your question to be considered, you can just send us an email at contact@yatesboston.com or slide into our DMs at Yates Team Boston.
That's it for this week. Be sure to tune in next week wherever you find your podcast. If you like this, be sure to like, subscribe, and give us that 5-star review. You can also find us on Instagram, YouTube, and TikTok. At Yates Team Boston or on the web at yatesboston.com.